Nayamarhati Vaikuntha Paramulo Pusharpanam Sambhavita Mati Sabda Sadhubi Paryupashitam. Please chant. Nah, not. I am this person. Arhati deserves Vaikuntha Paramula Upaparshanam. The approaching of the shelter of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. Sambhavita Mati. Considering himself highly esteemed. Stabda, impudent. Sadhubi, by great saintly persons. Paryupashitam, worshipped. Translation. This person is puffed up because of his achievements, thinking, I am the best. He does not deserve to approach the shelter of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, which are worshipped by all saintly persons, for he is impudent, thinking himself greatly important. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. If a devotee thinks that he is very much advanced in devotional service, he is considered puffed up and unfit to sit beneath the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. Again, this instruction by Lord Chaitanya is applicable. Trinadapi sinishena, tororapi sahishnuna, amani namanadena, kirtaniya siddhahari. One should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. Unless one is humble and meek, one cannot qualify to sit at the lotus feet of the Lord. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksurhun Minitam Minatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripata Mahambande Sri Gurum Dinitarino Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bahevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiti Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we have to realize the Srimad Bhagavatam is a person. And the Srimad Bhagavatam has a bit of humor. If we look at this verse and we look at who's sitting here, I would say the matchup is pretty accurate. This person is puffed up because of his achievements, thinking, I am the best. He does not deserve to approach the shelter of Lord Vishnu's lotus feet, which are worshipped by all saintly persons, because he is impudent, thinking himself greatly important. I like the Sanskrit. I like to pay attention in different verses to the Sanskrit. This particular verse, the first two words here, na arhati, does not deserve. Okay, does not deserve, but does not deserve what? That's the question. What doesn't this person deserve? Vaikuntha paramula uprasharpanam. Vaikuntha para, this means the feet of that person who resides in Vaikuntha. Who resides in Vaikuntha? Well, Vaikuntha Nath, the Lord of Vaikuntha. So the feet of the Lord of Vaikuntha, this person does not deserve. And what doesn't he deserve there is the shelter at the feet of that person. So the conclusion is that such a person is not deserving of the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the Lord giving him shelter. For a devotee, this is the worst type of an assessment of their qualifications, of their qualities, of activities. In the process of devotional service, we're encouraged that there's only one thing alone that can really give us comfort, can really give us happiness in this world. That's the shelter in the Lord's lotus feet. And why is that? This material world, we know it's described as samsara, as being like a fire, constantly burning. Now, when something's very hot, is burning, is very unpleasant, you want something that is the opposite of that, something that's cooling, something that's gives a little bit of relief from that. Just like I was told that here in Vrindavan, up until just a couple of days ago, it was just like blazing hot. Just to sit up out of bed in the morning, you're just dripping with sweat. So hot. Then it rained a couple of days ago, and the temperature kind of changed. And everything kind of came down a bit and is a little bit more comfortable, and all the Brijbasis are very happy. Oh, a little bit of relief. But that's the nature of this world. Now, as a Vaishnava, where do we go if we want to seek shelter, if we want some comfort? Well, where's the natural place? For that answer, we can look to our famous Acharya Narottam Das Thakur, famous songwriter, famous philosopher, famous preacher, famous hero. He has told us, Nitai Pada Kamala Koti Chanda Shushitala. Nitai Pada Kamala, the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, these lotus feet are like the cooling rays of the moon. The cooling rays of the moon. Not one moon. Not two moons, one for each foot. But Koti Chandra, millions and millions of moons. This is what the satisfaction the devotee feels when he gets the shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. Now, we have this Radha Krishna Purnima Rasa dance, and it takes place under the full moon. Now one might think, well, why wouldn't they perform this under the dark moon, under the new moon? Because they're trying to hide their activities from the elders. But there's much greater satisfaction in being in the full moon. This is the pleasure one gets to. Before I took rest last night, I looked out the window on the balcony in the room I'm staying in, and I saw the full moon was right there. And, well, it was such a satisfying sight. Bright and very peaceful and brings some immediate comfort to the mind. Now, multiply that by millions. Millions and millions times that comfort, that satisfaction, that pleasure that one feels under the shade of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. When I was a young brahmachari, I had the great fortune of being brought up in a temple where our temple president was a great proponent of taking shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. He trained all of us that were under his care in how important the lotus feet of the Lord were, particularly in our case, because we had Gornitai Didis, Nitai Gaur Nataraj, the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. But in general, the lotus feet of the Lord, how important it was. I always tell this story. We were sometimes seen as maybe a little bit of fanatics. I remember in the kitchen, who's been a cook or a pot washer? Anybody that's been a cook or a pot washer knows the kitchen gets a little hot sometimes. So one devotee had carved plaster of Paris, lotus feet, and put them on a little metal bar with a little ring so that they went back and forth, and then painted them golden And on the bottom, carved all the different symbols and hung that from the middle of the pot rack in the kitchen. And when things would just get crazy and hectic in the kitchen, the Bodhis would go up and rub their... Oh. So we were trained like that we had to take shelter of the lotus feet. Now, that may be a little bit too unusual end, but the mood was there that the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord will bring pleasure, will bring satisfaction, will bring relief from the miseries of this world. So for a devotee to be told, you do not deserve that shelter. No, you can't have it. That's so painful. As a devotee, that's what we want. That's what we hanker for. No, you do not deserve it. You can't have it. Well, why? What did I do? How come I lost the chance? One has to ask like that if we're cursed in that way. So the Sanskrit in the verse gives that answer. Sambhavita mati stabdha. By being puffed up and thinking oneself highly esteemed and impudent. Now, this is a combination of adjectives that no aspiring Vaishnava wants placed next to their name. Oh, that devotee, oh yes, yes, he's the most humble devotee. He's so expert at kirtan. He dresses the deity so nicely. Oh, he cooks so wonderfully. Oh, that devotee, he's very puffed up. He thinks so much of himself, and he's so impudent to others. Which would we rather be described by? So we don't hanker to have that group of adjectives placed next to our name. The being puffed up, okay, we all understand that. You know, that's bad enough. But then on top of that, being full of oneself, being very proud of my, as the verse says, I am the best. Just saying that means you have to take a breath and hold your chest out. I am the best. You can't just say, oh yeah, I'm the best. No, 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 I am the best. So add to that being puffed up. Now, add that third word, impudent. Impudent. It's a really unpleasant word. Our great lexicologist, Daniel Webster, he defines the word impudent by these descriptions. Shamelessly brazen and immodest. Rude, saucy, and insulting. Ouch. These, again, are not words as a Vaishnava we want someone to describe us by. Oh, yeah, that Shataratma, he's shamelessly brazen, and he's so rude, and he's such an insulting person. You would hang your head in shame if you heard that people were describing you like that. Does anybody want that description of themselves? No, none of us do. Even if we're the humblest of devotees, we don't want that placed on us. Well, I mean, there are some people that have that placed on us. There's a group of fools currently running for office in the United States, but that's another story, and we won't go there. They fit all of these characteristics. So because of having these particular bad qualities, we will quickly find ourselves unqualified for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But why? I mean, there's so many people that behave like that. These are the qualities that no sincere Vaishnava wants to come across in their path in devotional service. These are the qualities that, as a devotee, we endeavor to root out. These are the qualities that are put on us at the time of coming to this material world with all of our endless material desires. So we want to root these things out. We spend a lifetime chanting our japa. We spend a lifetime associating with the devotees. We spend a lifetime going to kirtan to get rid of these things. So without the association of the devotees, though, we should understand very clearly that we are doomed, completely finished. Vaishnavas, they're gentle in their mind, They're gentle in their words. They're gentle in their actions. And a Vaishnava, therefore, because they're like that, they don't want to associate with harsh, rough people. If a Vaishnava does associate with some person, it's to give them their mercy and hope that those qualities will go away and better qualities will come. So if we have these qualities in our heart, then we can understand it's because we have not gotten that association of Vaishnavas properly. In this particular purport, very short one, but there's a very famous verse quoted, and it's the second time it says, Prabhupada says here, again, this instruction is applicable. It's the second time in four verses that Prabhupada has quoted this particular verse, the third stanza of the Shikshastakam. Now, this is probably one of the most quoted verses we'll find. I wished I'd had access to the Veda base. Sometimes in Alachua, when Nagaraj Prabhu gives a class, he'll say, you know, I looked this up in the Veda base and this is quoted 1,296 times, something like that. So I wish I would have been able to look this up, because I'm sure the amount of times that Prabhupada quotes this verse would have been vast, because it is such an important verse. And why is it such an important verse? It's an important verse because it encapsulates the entire teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu did not write very much. He did not spend much time producing literatures like he had the Goswamis do. He left that up to Rupa, Sanatan, all the other Goswamis, Krishnadas Kaviraj. But he did leave the Shikshastakam. So we can understand that the Shikshastakam embodies the essence of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should make it our business to be attentive to those verses. Particularly, we should make it our business to be attentive to verses that are regularly quoted, particularly this third one. I had the chance just before leaving Alachua to speak on a verse that also quoted this third stanza of the Shikshastakam. So these qualities, as noted by Lord Chaitanya, that one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respect to others. In such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So this is the mood we want to develop. How is it that these other qualities that are being described here sometimes enter into our devotional life? Even sometimes in the best of devotees, you'll see by accident these qualities start to manifest. What is it that causes that to happen? Well, one of the most contributing factors to that is prajalpa. Prajalpa, the business of prajalpa is to remove our peace of mind. In the list of the 12 qualities required for proper execution of archana, worship of the deities, number 8 is to be peaceful in one's mind, / to be free from prajalpa. The nature of prajalpa is it agitates the mind. It's always some topic there. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives 8 particular types of prajalpa that one should avoid. Number 1, useless talks. Number 2, arguments. Number 3, gossip. Number 4, debates, simply for the purpose of conquest. Number 5, fault finding in others. Of course, the purpose in that is to look at others' bad habits instead of one's own. Number 6, speaking falsehoods. Number 7, blaspheming devotees. And number eight, worldly talk. These eight are the prajalpa categories that Bhaktivinoda Thakur notes are present in this world. Four of these, sadly to say, are very common in our society. And these four contribute very generously to bringing us to the point of being na arhati, not deserving. And those four are gossip, fault finding in others, speaking falsehoods, and blaspheming devotees. These four activities are guaranteed, no question about it, to make you unqualified for the mercy of the Lord and the association of Vaishnavas. So if you think, you know, I don't really want to get the Lord's blessings and I really don't want to hang out with those devotees, then by all means, take up gossip. Fault find your God brothers. Speak falsehoods about other people and blaspheme the devotees, and you will be guaranteed to get that result. The third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam gives a broader description of these words. The first set of phrases used is gramya kata. Gramya kata means the words of the village, the common discussion. So-and-so got this, so-and-so went there, this one did that, so-and-so is looking to go in this, you know, things like that. These particular words, this verse in the third canto go on to describe, are known as kukata. Kukata means bad words. Now, generally, if we say bad words, usually you're speaking to someone that's let some foul type of language come out. No, bad words in this case means words that do not bring about love of God. But what do they bring about? Matigni, Bhagavatam describes. Matigni means words that kill the intelligence. What is our intelligence meant for doing? Glorifying the personality of Godhead. Glorifying the personality of Godhead's devotees. But instead, if we engage in these four types of prajalpa listed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it kills our intelligence. Our intelligence is meant to glorify, not to criticize, fault find, gossip, and spread rumors about. So, sincere Vaishnavas, all of you are sincere Vaishnavas. Everyone seated here is a sincere Vaishnava. Sincere Vaishnavas strive to remove these activities from their life, from their daily functions, from their general activities. The problem is we have such a taste for doing these things. It's a real difficulty. We haven't properly developed a taste for Krishna Katha, but we so easily developed a taste for these other types of prajalpa. Now, in the verse that I was mentioning that I got to speak about when I was in Alachua, the close of that verse was this quote, which I thought was so appropriate. A falsely proud neophyte devotee may consider himself to be a great devotee of the Lord without taking the association of the Lord's followers. But without such association, it is not possible to become advanced in Krishna consciousness. Let me repeat that once more. A falsely proud neophyte devotee may consider himself a great devotee of the Lord without taking the association of other devotees. But without such association, it is not possible to advance in Krishna consciousness. So we have to have each other's association. We will drown without it. We cannot be successful on our own. What does the Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam in the fifth canto? Anyone thinks who they can be Krishna conscious without the association of this ISKCON society is simply living in a hallucination. It cannot be done. So we don't want to live in a world of hallucinations. Some of us had that opportunity before becoming devotees. So we don't want to go back to that life. So we want to live in the reality. The reality is this right here in front of us. All of these devotees here sitting next to each other, eagerly trying to absorb their mind in Krishna Katha, eagerly trying to set aside this prajalpa. Now, tomorrow begins the last month of Chaturmasya, or as we more commonly know it, the month of Kartik, Damodarvrata. And it is an ideal time of year for taking a vow. Many devotees, they take very, very serious vows during Kartik. I would just like to suggest that maybe one vow that would be ideal to take at this time of year would be to increase our Krishna Katha by decreasing the various types of prajalpa that do nothing but erode our devotional creeper. So this way we can spend the entire month of Kartik uplifting ourselves with words of quality and spending less time with words that will degrade us. So if we can give up these three bad qualities that we see here are associated with Chitta Ketu, being puffed up, not getting the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, and being impudent, if we can get rid of these qualities, then we can open ourselves up to being viable candidates for the mercy of the Vaishnavas. How do we do that? That's something to aspire for, but how do we obtain it? Just by filling our minds with the qualities of not only the Lord, but of the Lord's devotees. Of the Lord's devotees, one of the most important qualities we find is humility. Now, today is the disappearance day of Murari Gupta. And Murari Gupta was known very strongly for his humility. So I thought I'd take the last few minutes of this class and speak about Murari Gupta, because he is such an important associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we'll see. Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, it describes that he perfectly presented all the spiritual and professional qualities of an intimate associate of the Lord. He was a prominent Ayurvedic doctor by profession. And so he would cure someone's material disease, but while giving them that cure, he would also cure their spiritual disease. Srila Prabhupada mentions in one of the purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita that this should be a good example for modern day doctors, that don't simply cure the material disease, but cure the spiritual disease as well. We have two, three doctors in Alachua, one devotee that particularly comes to mind. You cannot spend 5 minutes in his association. Some story about the pastimes of the Lord's associates doesn't come out of his mouth. Oh, yes, here, you need this pill also. That's good. Did you know that Krishna does cover? And he'd go on like that, you know? So this is the activity of a doctor. Prabhupada mentions that Murari Gupta was the ideal grihastha, because he was a great devotee of both Lord Ramchandra and a great devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by practicing his occupation as a physician, he at the same time was able to satisfy Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the best of his abilities. And this made him an ideal householder. Now, for those of us who are in the Grihastha Ashram, and as I look around, it's probably the majority of us, it seems, this is a challenge. To execute our necessary profession, maintaining our family, maintaining our household, and at the same time satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, while doing so. Srila Prabhupada has given us a very nice formula for doing that, and it involves being closely active in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. This way, we can engage in so many different activities which Prabhupada set up for us. In the Gaura Gonadesha Deepika, which is the written book of Kavi Karnapur that describes all the different associates of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and who they were during the pastimes of Krishna, or during what other pastimes they may have been there for, Murari Gupta is mentioned as being Ramchandra's immediate associate, Hanuman. The significance of this and the significance of his being a doctor are not lost. When Hanuman was engaged in the pastimes with Ram and Lakshman, and Lakshman, of course, during the battle with Ravana, fell struck by the Shakti arrow and could not be revived, Sushena, the monkey doctor, he instructed that you go to the Himalayas, there's this amazing herb, Sajjivani, and you bring that and this will revive Lakshman. So Hanuman went, but he wasn't so well trained in all the medicinal arts and he couldn't distinguish which herb is this I'm supposed to be getting. All right, I'll just take the whole mountain. So he lifted the whole mountain and brought it back. So in his incarnation as Mararigupta, he was the expert physician and understood all the proper treatments with all the different types of creepers and herbs and things like this. Now there's an explanation given in the Chaitanya Bhagavat of his name, Mararigupta. Gupta, of course, we know means hidden. So what was hidden about him? Murari, Krishna, was hidden within his heart by the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is why he was referred to as Mararigupta. If we look at Mararigupta's family life, we only find that he came in a line of physicians. There is no information as to who his mother and father were or who his siblings were. But we know that he was born in Srihatta. There are many, many famous devotees that come from this place, Srihatta. Most of them, during the Navadvipa Lila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they also moved to Navadvipa and resided there in Sridham Navadvipa. It was mentioned that the heart of Mararigupta was completely filled to the brim with love of God, so much so that the humility manifested in him by such love of God melted the heart of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now imagine that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's very heart, his very essence of love of God, melted by the humility of Mararigupta. Completely the opposite of Chittaketu, as we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam here. It's mentioned that Mararigupta was a little bit older than Mahaprabhu, although they were both in, Gangadas Pandit. Gangadas Pandit school. They were both students there, but Mararigupta was a little older student. And Nimai Pandit, of course, at that time in his life, was very expert in logic and argument and debate. And he would always find Mararigupta and engage some debate with him, engage some argument with him. And Mararigupta was not very fond of doing this. He didn't care for it. So one time, they got into a very, very big debate. And it was a very heated debate. And their voices raised. And they began screaming back and forth at each other, raising their point. No, no, you're wrong. It said that. No, no, you don't know what you're talking about. No, I'm telling you it's like this. No, what do you know? Back and forth, back and forth. And very, very loud they came. And walking away from the school, very, very, the heat just increased. And push one on the shoulder. No, 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 you don't know. And push the other one in the shoulder. One hand. And then both hands pushing back and forth. No, no, you don't know. And then they got to the bank of the Ganga, and they got into the Ganga and were pushing each other and stirring up so much so they were pushing and shoving and splashing water and yelling that all the mud from the bottom of the Ganga came up. And the ladies that came to get their water to take home for their household necessities, they couldn't take it home. It was all muddy water. What are you going to do with muddy water? Here, my husband, have a glass of water. What? This is full of mud. Yeah, that's from Nimai Pandit and Murari. What can I do, you know? And the Brahmins were there trying to take bath. How can you take bath with water that's all filled with mud? You come out and you're all covered in mud. So they couldn't bathe. So much excitement was there in this argument between the two of them. Sometimes Mararigupta would fulfill that role. They would often engage in this joking and mock debate. It wasn't serious. Neither of them really had any ill intention towards the other. It was just all part of their lila. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed a little bit about himself to to Murarigupta. There is one sannyasi, Mahaprabhu said. He lives in Kashi. His name is Prakasananda. He is simply cutting me to pieces with his words disavowing the Vedas. One day, I will go and correct him. One day, Mahaprabhu and Nityananda were seated together, and Murarigupta came in. He saw the two of them. He went to Mahaprabhu. He offered his obeisances. And then he went to Nityananda. He offered his obeisances. Mahaprabhu said to him, Murarigupta, you've done this incorrectly. You have offered obeisances in the wrong manner. Murarigupta simply replied, Prabhu, as you have inspired me, so I have acted. Mahaprabhu said, all right. You go home, and in due course of time, if you understand something different a little later, you can correct that. So Murarigupta went home. He had his meal, took his noonday prasadam, and then as many of us do, after taking nice noonday prasadam, we take a little nap. Especially when you have a little freedom in your schedule. All right, prasadam's finished, going to nap for a while. So Murarigupta also did like this. He laid down and took a little nap. In his dream, the chief of the Mahabhagavats, Nityananda, came before him. He had his cloth all tied up in the front, wrapped around his waist like a wrestler. And above his head, many, many, many heads of the serpent, Ananta. In one hand was the plow, and in the other hand was the club. Nityananda was appearing in his dream to him just as Lord Balaram. From behind him was a mass of peacock feathers. And behind that was Vishvambhar himself, Lord Chaitanya, with a small peacock feather in his head, walking after Nityananda / Balaram. Nityananda manifested himself as Haladar, the carrier of the plow, just for the mercy of Murarigupta. Now, Murari, he could understand very well what the purpose of this dream was. He understood very clear who is greater. Of course, this is an endless debate. Lord Chaitanya is greater, Nityananda is greater. It depends on the particular pastime. In this pastime, in the dream, Mahaprabhu looked to Murari and he said, Murari, now you have understood? Well, there's a question mark at the end with the voice going up. Now you have understood? That's great emphasis is placed in that type of speech. He said, if you come before me and breach the proper conduct, how will that look? Murarigupta, in his dream, looked up and with tears in his eyes, he called out, Nityananda! Nityananda! As he was calling out in his dream like that, in his body, laying there napping, he was calling out, Nityananda! Nityananda! And his wife called, Krishna! Krishna! What is happening? Krishna! Krishna! She came and she woke him up. When he awoke from that dream, Murari could understand the greatness of the position of Lord Nityananda. It is to be understood that it is Nityananda who reveals to us the greatness of Lord Chaitanya. So, when Murarigupta went back to the home, he saw that there is Lord Chaitanya seated, there is Nityananda seated. He came in and he first went to Nityananda and he offered his obeisances. And then he went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he offered his obeisances. And Mahaprabhu looked at him and said, ah, now you have understood. One day, during his Mahaprakash Lila, Mahaprabhu was giving different boons and benediction to all the different devotees. But he happened to say, that Murari, he still does not know who I am. Murari now observed my real form. And with that, Murari Gupta saw sitting there on the seat was his own Lord Ramchandra, decorated with wonderful ornaments, a beautiful crown, holding a bow and arrow in both hands. Sita was sitting on his left side. Lakshman was on his right side. In front of them were all the different monkey warriors offering obeisances. Murari then saw himself as Hanuman amongst those monkey warriors offering obeisances to Lord Ram. Recognizing himself in the vision that he himself was seeing, he fell to the ground unconscious. The Lord saw that he had fainted and addressed him, Murari, get up. Look at my divine form which you hanker for. Have you forgotten that you are the Hanuman who has burnt Ravana's kingdom? Get up and see your favored Lakshman who you saved by bringing the herbs to heal him. Get up and offer your respects to Sita. Murari then was laying on the ground and he regained his consciousness. And he got up and tears were simply pouring from his eyes incessantly. In this way, he received directly the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You may remember that during that pastime, Mahaprabhu was showing all the different devotees the particular form that identified their relationship with him. One day, in the house of Srivas, Mahaprabhu revealed his four-armed form of Lord Vishnu, carrying a club, a chakra, a lotus flower, and a conch shell. And at that time, Murari came into the room. When Murari came into the room, he saw this form of Vishnu, and he immediately assumed the form of Garuda. And Mahaprabhu climbed up on Murari's back. To some of the devotees, they didn't see Garuda and Vishnu. Some of them did. Some of them just saw Mahaprabhu on the back of Murari running around the room. Some of them were fortunate and saw, oh, there is our Lord Vishnu on the back of Garuda. These were the different types of scenes that took place in the house of Srivas. One day, Mahaprabhu came to Murari's house. Has anybody been to the home of Murari Gupta in Mayapur? Beautiful place there. I hold in my treasures, in a small container at my house, some tulsi leaves and some flower petals and some sandalwood paste from the deities of Murari Gupta at his home. So one day he arrived at Murari Gupta's home and he appeared in the mood and form of Lord Varaha. And he picked up one water pot that was there sitting in the doorway at Murari Gupta's house and hoisted it upon his teeth. Murari Gupta fell down to the ground at the lotus feet, lotus hoofs, one or the other, and offered his respects to Lord Varaha / Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu then said to him, Murari, sing some hymns in my praise. And at that moment, Murari Gupta started to recite various prayers in glorification of Lord Varaha. The Lord became very, very happy with these and said to Murari, Murari, I am speaking the truth to you. I am the essence of all scriptures. I have come to engage Harinam Sankirtan in my own form, as well as to introduce it to all others. I cannot tolerate when there is any malice towards my devotees. If someone tries to harm my devotee, I will tear off their head. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya even sometimes manifested a form to protect the devotees. We all know that during the time of Mahaprabhu's Navadvipa Lila, there were different oppositions to the Harinam Sankirtan party. Sometimes the Lord would manifest different forms to give the devotees encouragement that he would protect them. So after saying all these things to Murari Mahaprabhu, returned to his own form and then went back to his house. Another day, so many other days, Murari Gupta came to Srinivas's courtyard and he saw that Mahaprabhu was seated on a very royal, regal throne again. And all the different devotees were there. Gadadhar was offering him pan and betel. Mahaprabhu was very happily chewing that, smiling very nicely. Narahari was fanning him with the chamra. So Murari came before him and bowed and began to offer different obeisances and different prayers. And then Mahaprabhu took some of the remnants of that betel he was chewing out of his mouth and he wiped it on the head. He took some and he put it down. And the Murari grabbed that and put it in his own mouth and then wiped his hand on his head. Amazing. Mahaprabhu took it out of his mouth, put it down. Murari gets it. Sometimes I see different devotees do that when they're around their spiritual master. They just wait that he sets something down, and if he's a little distracted, they take it, put it in their mouth. Murari Gupta did like this. So you're following, whoever's doing that, you're following a good standard. Murari Gupta used to do that. So Murari Gupta did it, but then he wiped his hand on his. Mahaprabhu said, "Murari, what are you doing? The food that was in my mouth has now touched your body." Murari Gupta said, "Yes. And because of that, today my entire body has become purified." We can understand the prasadam of the Lord is not material. His name, his very self, his prasadam, it's all completely non-different. It mentions that if one thinks that prasadam is different, how's that verse go? That if one thinks that ordinary rice, dal, and chapatis, once it's offered to the Lord, remains ordinary rice, dal, and chapatis, he has a hellish mentality. So having received that mahaprasadam from Mahaprabhu, Murari then became intoxicated with love of Godhead. And he arrived at his home in that intoxicated state. So he was with Mahaprabhu, he took that betel nut, that pan prasadam, put it in his hand. Not only the benefit of it being mahaprasadam, but the benefit of being purified by it being touched by the Lord. And so in this way became completely intoxicated. Maybe the fact that it was pan might have had a little something to do with it, who knows. And when he got home, his wife, very devoted wife, she saw him in this way, and she spread an asan out for him to sit down, and brought him prasadam and placed it before him. "Now, Prabhu, you take prasadam and calm down. You're a little excited." Murari Gupta, he was in a very ecstatic mood. So when he saw this prasadam, he began taking the rice and making little balls with the rice. And then he would sit that ball down and say, "Eat, eat." There was no one there to the external vision. Well, he would form another one, set it down, "Eat, eat." So it's mentioned that his wife was of equal mentality. The wife should be of the same mentality of the husband. And that she could understand what was going on. And she said, "Oh, my dear husband, please do not feed Nimai so much rice. It will give him indigestion." So he was making little balls, sitting and eating. He saw Nimai was there with him. So in this way, he finished his meal. And he took rest. In the morning, Mahaprabhu came quickly running to Murari Gupta's home, knocking on the door. "Murari, Murari, open." Murari opened the door. "Yes, yes, yes. What is going on? You've gotten me up out of bed so early. What's the problem?" He says, "Murari, have you forgotten so soon? You fed me so much rice with so much ghee yesterday. I've got indigestion. You're a doctor. You need to cure me." I said, what cure you? How am I going to cure you? "All right, I'll get you something." Mahaprabhu saw that same pot sitting there with water. He said, no. When one has indigestion, water is the cure. I have found the cure." And he picked up that pot from Murari Gupta's doorway and drank the water. When Murari Gupta saw that the loda that he kept in his hallway there by the door was drunk by Mahaprabhu, he cried out with his hands to his head, "Oh, now I am a fallen person. The water in my house is not even fit for you to drink." See, generally Brahmins, they wouldn't take their meals or even a glass of water from the home of somebody that wasn't a Brahmin. Mahaprabhu, he comes from a very good Brahmin family. And Marai Gupta, he comes from a family of vaidyas, doctors, physicians, not so high class by external standards. But the Lord, he is known as Bhakta Vatsa. He's very, very kind to his devotees. And so he gave his blessings in this very nice way to Marai Gupta by taking that water that was in his house. One time, Mahaprabhu sought to test Marai Gupta. I'll finish with this story. He said, my dear Marai Gupta, he said, you must give up this chanting of the name of Ram and devote yourself exclusively to the name of Krishna. This is my order to you. Now you do this. Murari promised Mahaprabhu, all right, I will do as you're asking. So he went home. And that entire night, he tried to give up the name of Ram. He tried instead to just take up the name of Krishna, neglecting his Ishtadev. Each of us has an Ishtadev, someone we're very much linked with. Ramchandra was his Ishtadev. Mahaprabhu was testing him. You just worship Krishna. Forget Ram. That's a different time. You were Hanuman then. You're not Hanuman now. He tried. All night long, he cried tears. How can I give up my Ram? I cannot do this. So in the morning, he went to Mahaprabhu. He placed his head on the feet of Mahaprabhu, crying tears on the feet of Mahaprabhu. He said, my dear Lord, he said, I've tried to give up the name of Ram. But I have to admit, I am sold out to him. I cannot give up the name. It causes me too much pain. If it means disobeying you even, I cannot give up the name of Ram. Mahaprabhu looked at Marai Gupta and smiled very happily. I was simply testing you. Your devotion to Lord Ram is the best. There is no one more devoted than you. Why should you give it up? You are Hanuman himself. How can Hanuman give up the worship of Lord Ram? I was simply testing you. And then in great jubilation, Lord Chaitanya raised his hands. He said, all glories to Marai Gupta. Let me hear everyone. All glories to Marai Gupta. You are so fixed in your worship that even at my request, you could not turn your mind. This is exactly the type of love and affection a servitor must have for the lotus feet of the Lord. All glories to Marai Gupta.
All glories to Marai Gupta.
All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnava Sangha ki jai. Gaura Premanandi.